offers his daughters. Culturally, we'd have a lot to unpack there, but we're not going to. The perversity is so much that they don't want even these daughters. They're like, no, we want these men. In which case, they move forward and destroy the city. On the way out of town, Lot's wife looks back. She was told not to look back. And she looks back at the destruction of the city, and she is turned into a pillar of salt. And Lot is gone with his daughters to live in the hill country. While he's there, it gets worse, gets more awkward. They decide they need to continue their line. It's not right that everyone else gets to have families. And so the daughters decide the only way they're going to do that is if they are able to continue the line through their father, and they comprise a plan that helps them do that. And we go, yay, Old Testament. But if that's bad enough, we go a little bit further, and you have that family of Abraham, and you have Isaac, and you have Jacob, and you have Joseph, and they end up in captivity in Egypt, and then Moses brings them out, and they go through these incredible battles where they take the land that God had promised Abraham way back when. And then in the book of Judges, they are settled in this new land, and they begin asking the question, what is life now like for the Israelites? What is their world? And Judges starts off telling you, look, there's a cycle that happens. And the cycle is this. Things will be going really great for the Israelites, and they will forget about God. And in this process of forgetting about God, God will send plunderers into the land and enemies to fight them. And the Israelites will go, oh no, where's God? We need God. And they'll call out to God, and God will hear them at their lowest point, and God will send them a judge. It will be some kind of military leader and ruler that unifies all of the tribes and all the people and fights against the plunderers and kicks them out and restores a time of peace and safety to the land. And everything will go well for a time until they turn from God once again, and the cycle happens over again. And it gives this impression that the cycle is this big circle, but it's not. It's more like a downward spiral, because each time that they recover a little less, until we get to some more really uncomfortable chapters, chapter 17. And in chapter 17, you have this crazy thing that has happened. You have this man, his name is Micah. And Micah decides that he just wants to have his own place of worship. He gets this money and goes and buys an idol constructed. Now, it's consecrated to the Lord, but they were not supposed to have idols representing God. Right? This was a huge, huge no-no. And yet, here he does it, because the text says Micah's doing this because in those days, Israel had no king. Everyone did as they saw fit. It's like, it makes sense in this world that Micah would do this. A reader later on would go, are you kidding me? He can't do this. You say, well, yeah, he can. Because in those days, Israel had no king. Everyone did as they saw fit. And so not only does he decide that he's going to have an idol, he sees a Levite passing through, and the Levites were supposed to be the priests. And he says, hey, come work in my house and be the Levite, you know, be the priest for my family and in my little sanctuary here. And the Levite works out a payment plan. It sounds good to him. And so he goes and works there for a time. And they want to make sure that you understand, it's not because they don't have a monarchy. It's not because Israel doesn't have an actual physical ruler. The problem is that Israel has forgotten God as their king. And they're just going to do whatever they want to. Before you think it's just Micah, I'm going to go to chapter 18. And a group of Danites are coming through. This isn't working. A group of Danites are going to come through. And it's going to remind you again, in those days, Israel had no king. Their God was not their king. These Danites come through. And basically, they find out about this setup. They go to battle after asking for guidance from this priest. They have success, so they decide to take the altar and the priest back with them as they settle in their new homes. Because now it's not just Micah and his family doing it. This is a whole tribe that has decided this kind of worship is a good idea. Because in those days, Israel had no king. And before you think that it's just a religious thing, we're dealing with theology, things get really messed up. And we go into Judges 19. And it starts off again saying, in those days, Israel had no king. It tells a story about another Levite from the tribe of people that are priests. And there's no commentary particularly on this, but this soap opera begins the story. And in this soap opera, this Levite has a concubine who's more like a slave, a very, very second-class wife. And she is unfaithful to him. They get in a fight, and she decides to go back to her dad. The Levite waits around for a while. She doesn't show up, so he goes back to get her. For some reason, her dad is very happy to see him and greets him, and they have a great visit. But the dad doesn't want her to leave with him, and so he sets up this plan to get this Levite drunk every night so he doesn't feel like traveling the next day. And I don't know how long he expected to delay him with this tactic, but it works for about 3 days. After that, the Levite says, forget this, I am out of here, we have got to go. So he grabs his Levite and his servant and his donkey, and they head on their way. And while they're going, it comes time for them to stop. They need a place of safety to rest for the night, and they pass the city of the Jebusites. And he says, no, we're not going to stay there. Those are ungodly people. All right, we need to stay in an Israelite city, not in some wicked Canaanite city. And so they go and make their way to Gibeah, which is in the region of the Benjaminites. And they go to this town, and it would be customary to go to the square and wait for someone to take you in, but no one did. And sometime later that evening, they're making plans to just stay in the city square. And an old man passes by and says, what are you doing? They said, we're just going to stay here for the night. And he insists very violently that they come home with them. Does this sound like something we just talked about? And so they go back with him, and they stay at his house. And just like in Sodom, back in Genesis 19, the wicked men of the city come to the door, and they want this Levite man so they can have their way with them. And he says, I've got another idea. Why don't you take my concubine? And it's not a conversation at this point. He just grabs her and throws her out the door. All right? She's horribly brutalized throughout the night. Lovingly the next morning, he comes out the door and nudges her while she is laying on the doorstep, and she is dead. So, again, we deal with some weirdness here. He does what anyone would do, and he chops her up in little pieces and sends her all throughout Israel. Now, I want to point out something. This is being done by God's people. These are descendants of Benjamin, one of Jacob's sons. These are people who are descendants of those who came out of Egypt, that they saw God on the mountain, that received the law, that saw these cities fall right before them as they took the land. These are men and women who should have known God and yet are acting in ways that are so vile that it brought the destruction of Sodom way back in Genesis. Things have gotten so far out of hand. And it looks like, for a minute, the Israelites are going to get it. Because they say, when they receive these messages, they say, this is terrible. This should not happen in Israel. So they all mount up their armies, and they go and they fight the Benjaminites. And the Benjaminites, and at first they ask for the perpetrators. Who are the men that did this? The Benjaminites should have given up those people. Okay? They should have said, these are men who are not acting the way that men and women of God are supposed to act, so they give them back. But they don't do that. Instead, they come to the defense of these vile creatures. And a battle ensues. Several battles ensue where a lot of lives are left, ultimately leaving only 600 male Benjaminites. The rest, all of them, are killed. All the cities are burned. All the animals and livestock are killed. And even though the text doesn't say it, it's kind of interesting, all their women are killed. And so the tribe of Benjamin is almost completely eradicated. So, the Israelites, so we got to have a plan to continue their legacy, right? Who are we to wipe an entire tribe off of the planet? Now, remember, Sodom was like Gibeah. But the restoration of Lot and his daughters is going to be like this. So they said, well, we got to come up with a plan to how we're going to give these Benjaminites some women so that they can have more children. But in the midst of all this fighting, all of the men had made a vow that they would not give their daughters to a Benjaminite. And so they have this problem. Nobody's going to give them a woman. We can't let them marry in with the people of surrounding areas. And so what are we going to do? And they look around and they realize that the people of Jabesh Gilead didn't show up to fight. It says that, oh, I've got an idea. Let's go get the women from Jabesh Gilead, who, by the way, are also Israelites, but they're not going to give their daughters over freely to these vile Benjaminites. So the Israelites go and destroy their own people except for 400 virgin women who they take and give to the Benjaminites. Slaughter all of them. But if you remember, there are 600 Benjaminites. They still need 200 more. And no one still wants to give up their daughters. And so they come up with another plan. They remember that there's about to be this festival of the Lord in Shiloh. And it's customary that all the young women would go out dancing in the vineyards as part of this festival. They say, I got a plan. Since none of our families are willing to give their daughters away, I mean, what would happen if the girls were just taken? See, then they didn't really violate their promise. And so that's the plan they make. The Benjaminite men hide in the vineyards, and as the girls come dancing, they grab them and carry them off back home. And that's the end of the book of Judges. Except for, it says this. In those days, Israel had no king. Everyone did as they saw fit. Yay. Glad I came to church today. This is why we don't let the youth minister preach. This is awful. This is awful. Things have gotten so far out of hand that they've even surpassed the ungodliness of the past. Fortunately, that's not the whole story. Another judge will come. His name is Samuel. Samuel will be a judge who is a priest. He will restore the religion of worshiping God faithfully to Israel. He will lead them in fights against the Philistines, but he won't do so as a military commander. He will do so as someone who seeks the guidance of God in all aspects. He'll return the ark back to Israel and do incredible things, better than any judges in a long time. But Samuel will not make wise decisions with his own family. And though he will want to pass leadership on to his sons, the Israelites will not have it. Instead, they come and ask him for a king. And we see this here in 1 Samuel chapter 8. And they say, it says, so all the elders of Israel gathered together and came to Samuel at Ramah. And they said to him, you're old and your sons do not follow your ways. Now appoint a king to lead us, such as all the other nations have. Okay, let's take a moment to note why they want a king. The reason they want a king is because everybody else around them has a king, and it seems to work out pretty well for them. But when they said, give us a king to lead us, this displeased Samuel. So he prayed to the Lord, and the Lord told him, listen to all that the people are saying to you. It's not you they've rejected, but they have rejected me as their king. And he's going to say, remind them, though. Remind them how a trick king is going to basically enslave them, and they're going to have to work like dogs for him. And so he does that. He delivers that message, and this is how they respond. But the people refused to listen to Samuel. No, they said, we want a king over us. Then we'll be like all the other nations with a king to lead us and to go out before us and fight our battles. right? We want someone to lead the charge for us. All the other nations have some great leader like that. That's what we want. When Samuel heard all that the people said, he repeated it before the Lord, and the Lord answered, "Listen to them and give them a king." The Lord says, give them what they want. And he'll give them a king. He gives them Saul. Saul is the king they had always wanted. Saul, the text says, is very handsome. He stands a head taller than everyone else. And he's strong. He's a great warrior. Right? Like, he is the Tom Brady of his day. Okay, like, this is the guy that if you want to have a king and everybody to be excited about how he's going to look on a postage stamp, this is the guy, right? Men want to be him, and women want to be with him. Like, they are excited about King Saul. They finally had the king they had always wanted. But have you ever thought about what would happen if you got what you wanted? Like, what would it be like if you got everything that you wanted in your life? I'm gonna do this. All right, so there's this website. You know it's not good when the youth minister says, "Hey, so there's this website." So this family, this woman got frustrated with her kids fussing all the time. And she said, "I can't believe I'm having these conversations with you right now." The kid is crying. And so she started taking pictures and then writing down why her kid is crying, okay? And then started this blog called Reasons My Kid Is Crying. And, like, if you're a parent or you've taken care of kids, like, kids will get upset and cry, especially when they're really young, over the dumbest things. And you're thinking, why? How are these words coming out of my mouth? Right? Like, why are we having this conversation that's not really a conversation? Because this is the definition of insanity right here. So anyway, I brought a few of these to share. So this kid is crying because I put his hood up when it got chilly. And we've seen that, right? Even though it's best for him, that's not what he wants. I got it. All right. This next one, it's hard to see. I told him he couldn't take the store's display wagon full of pink socks home. So he is deeply upset about this. Here's another good one. I broke his cheese in half. Right? No, not two cheeses. No, not mine. What my teeth are gonna do anyway. I love the look on this next kid's face. All right. No, the humanity. I couldn't fix his cracker, is what it says. And, like, you can't see it, but there's a tiny little piece of that Ritz cracker that is broken off, and he's like, "Oh, the humanity." And she's like, couldn't fix it. All right, here's the next one. This is good. Have you ever seen this face? This is the worst. This got me beat as a kid so bad. All right, he doesn't want to go, even though we've repeatedly told him we're not going anywhere. Have you ever had that conversation? That's the worst. Okay, this next one, we're gonna say it, we're gonna move on. I wouldn't let him eat the pregnancy test I was taking. That's wrong on like 10 levels. Just keep going. All right, this is my favorite. Look at this poor, sad little girl. She's crying because her mom wouldn't buy her the Dolly movie for Christmas. All right, you see that's a Chucky horror movie. But you know what? It's not just kids who get upset. Like, it's adults. We do too. I was taking the teenagers to, I think it was the beach retreat. And we had two different vans. And we pulled into this really busy gas station, and I had to gas up one, and I had another one unloading with people, and I needed to get it gassed up. And right behind me, this RV pulls up. And I know we're going to take a long time, right? Like, I've done this before, and know this is going to be a little bit of chaos, but we're going to get everybody back in here and get back on the road. But I see this RV pull up, and I decide I'm going to tell him that it's going to be a while, and maybe he can go find another place to park. And so I walk back to talk to him, and I think he assumed I was going to hit him up for money or I was going to try to convert him. I don't know what he thought was about to happen, but he refused to make eye contact with me. And so I'm standing outside his door, and he's way up there, and I'm like, hey. And he, like, glances down at me, and I'm like, okay, we're going to be a minute. And he just nods like that. And I was like, okay. All right, buddy. So I go through the adventure that every bathroom stop is with youth ministry, and we get everybody, get the vans gassed up, and I'm getting everybody out of the store and into the vans, and I'm starting, like, counting. And since we have two vans, I'm checking both. And this guy climbs out of his RV, and so he's standing way up there, and he's like, hey, hurry up! And I'm thinking, I just tried to head this off, you know. And so I looked back at him and I said, hold on a minute. And his response was, I don't want to. I remember, I just stared at him. And I just stood there for a moment. And I just shrugged. I mean, because I've got stuff to do. I've got to make sure that everyone gets on the bus and comes home. Most of their parents would like that, right? Like, so this, what needs to happen is me get all those kids on the buses and we move on, and then he can pull up. That's what needed, even though that's not what he wanted. We know what we want is not always what we need. And you know this really, especially if you've run into an ex, somebody you dated at an earlier part of your life, and you run into them somewhere, and you go, wow, dodged a bullet on that one, right? Like, there's enough that has happened where you go, okay, I remember how I really, really thought this person was it. And maybe it was just a short time, and maybe it was a long period of time, I don't know, but there was a period of time where you go, I want this to work out. And that Garth Brooks song comes to mind, Unanswered Prayers, right? He runs into this girl at a high school football game, and he remembers all their memories together. But then when it's time for her to walk away, he looks at his wife, and he's like, and then I thank the good Lord for the gifts in my life, right? He's like, that could have gone really, really poorly. And we have that, right? If we had gotten and received what we had wanted, our life would have turned out much, much different. And so if we're grateful that God leads us to what we need, not what we want. Israel got the king that they wanted. They did not get the king that they needed. As you read through 1 Samuel, you will see that Saul is cowardly. When it is time for him to be revealed as the king, he's hiding. Saul is insecure and is always worrying about what everybody else thinks. Saul is impatient. When Samuel doesn't show up to offer the sacrifices before battle, he's gonna flip out. And then Saul is going to be impulsive. And he's going to decide, I've seen Samuel offer the sacrifices many times. I'll just do it myself, even though he was not a priest. And it was prohibited for him to do that. He will dishonor God because of his impatience and his impulsiveness, and God will remove him as king. But there's another piece to Saul that I failed to mention. Saul is a Benjaminite. Saul's heritage is all that we were talking about before. And by his heritage, I mean either his parents or his grandparents were involved in the events of the end of Judges. His father or his grandfather defended vile and wicked and murderous and perverse men and went to battle to fight for them. His mother or his grandmother was a captive in among a strange people. Either her parents were murdered, or they just turned a blind eye while she was kidnapped. Either way, she's going to be carrying some baggage. This is a very, very small tribe with very few people. And Israel has not forgotten what happened with Benjamin only 20 to 50 years earlier. The fact that Saul is chosen as king is not a coincidence. Saul represents everything about doing what you want. He is the king that they want, and he represents everything about living life the way that you want apart from God. Saul is the king that they want, a Benjaminite, but not the king that they need. We can be just like Israelites. We know the king that we need, and we know what the king that we need says. He says to tithe, but we say we don't want to. He says you need to train your children to know God, to read your Bible with them, to pray with them. We say, but we don't have time. I don't want to. I know there are great Bible classes at our church, but I don't want to get up and get them over there to those things. He says, I know that you tell me to love my enemies, but my enemies are dirtbags. My enemies have done terrible things, and they don't deserve love. And I show power over them when I don't love them and when I hate them. You say to love them, but I don't want to. You say to forgive, but the people who I need to forgive do not deserve it. They have brought on hurt too much. And if I let that go, I will be weak. I know that's what you say I need, but I don't want to. I know you say to remain pure, to keep a holy relationship, to wait for marriage before having sex, and yet I don't want to because my body tells me to do something now. I know you say that I shouldn't be gossiping and talking about people, but it makes me feel better than them, and it covers over my own insecurities. I know you say what I need, but I don't want to. We claimed the king that we want and not the king that we need. And in doing so, we live as if we have no king. We just do as we see fit. 1,000 years after Saul, God will send another king. The numbers are great because it really is right at 1,000 years. When God sends the king, not that people want. He will not be wealthy. Isaiah will say he's not going to be very much to look at. He's not going to be a powerful military leader. And ultimately, he won't ride off into the sunset in victory. He will be convicted and put to death like a common criminal. He will not be the king that anybody wants. But in that crucifixion, he will die for the sins of humanity. He will take on the brokenness of everyone who lives throughout history and redeem them in a way they could not by themselves, no matter how hard they tried. And he'll show everyone what it means to walk faithfully with God. He might not be the king that they want, but he was the king that they needed. When we learn to trust this king, we will discover the king that we need can become the king that we want. We discover that even though we don't want to, when we tithe, that money begins to not have control over us. And we begin to want the king that we need. Even though we are busy and we are tired, and it is important to teach our children and grow in our own understanding of the Bible and to participate in Bible classes and to have personal Bible study at home, even though at times we don't want to, when we engage in that, we see the powerful and rich ways that God changes and shapes us. And the God that we need becomes the God that we want. when we love our enemies, we discover that we destroy them and they no longer exist because they become friends. And we begin to see our own brokenness reflected through their eyes. And we see that it is good that we love even those who don't deserve it, because that's how God loves us. And the God that we didn't want, the king that we didn't want, becomes the king that we need. When we forgive, we learn that it is us who are set free. The king that we did not want becomes the king that we need. When we remain pure, we discover that we're not just holding up our own purity, but we are blessing our future marriage, and we're also blessing marriage as a whole and holding it up as sacred. And we discover that even though that now it is time that the king that we need becomes the king that we want. When we stop gossiping and trying to use words to make ourselves feel better, we discover that the God that we want is also the God that we need. We see this truth here in Romans chapter 12. The first part is this. He says, therefore, I urge you, dear brothers, in view of God's mercy, here we go, to offer your bodies as living sacrifices, holy and pleasing to God. This is your true and proper worship. Do not conform any longer to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good, pleasing, and perfect will. I was told once that the problem with living sacrifices is they keep trying to crawl off the altar, all right? Nobody wants to die, all right? A living sacrifice has to die over and over again, but that is not what we want. And yet, Scripture tells us that is what we need. But it says, when you don't conform to this world and you're transformed through this process of sacrificial living, he says, then, this is what will happen. You'll be able to test and approve God's will. You'll be able to understand and get why it was so important. The God that you need will become the God that you want. Okay, we covered a lot of ground today. There's two things that I want you to take away. And the first is this. I want to invite you to choose the king that you need. The king, first of all, the king that you need is better than any other that you might want. The king that you need will not be the one who gives you all of your desires, but you'll discover that as you follow him and trust him, that he should have been the one that you wanted all along. And this is a reminder that the king you need is superior in all ways to the king that you want. All right. I don't know where you're at in this today. You may see yourself in one of those categories and you need some prayer. And I want to encourage you, elders and staff are available all week. All right, we're available all the time, and we would love to help you on your journey to get where you need to be with God. If you have something on your heart right now and are particularly convicted, you say, no, I have been just chasing what I want. The king that I want is me. If I rewrote that verse and said, in those days, I had no king. I did as I saw fit. And you want some prayers? Then we're here to do that. If you have anything you want, the elders and staff are going to be available at the sides, and we hope that you'll come and pray with us as we stand and sing.